Okay, let's record.
Okay. We are recording, aren't we? Yeah, we're still recording.
Oh, great. Let's go. All right, okay. Good.
No, clap on three.
Yeah, I don't even know if we need to do it on three, right?
Okay.
Or no.
Clap. Yeah, I mean, say, we have to do it at the same time.
Yeah.
So 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
I don't know if my clap was heard. Let's do one more time.
There's a delay. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Okay, perfect.
Cool.
Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did. Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Bethany Watson, your lip stain wearing, candle burning, eating Halo Top for every meal friend.
And I'm Kathleen Heaney, your already buying Christmas decor. I am addicted to fresh salsa. I just purchased a jumbo size French press because that's where I am in my life right now, friend.
And every week, Kathleen and I get together to discuss our lives, what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. Kathleen, what is your topic this week?
Mashed potatoes. No, so I've been thinking about mashed potatoes a lot lately. There's a backstory behind it. I will tell you that backstory when we get to my section. But the other day, my husband is like, can I borrow your phone? I need to look something up. I was like, sure. So I handed my phone over to him and he used my Google and he's like, I'm not looking at what you're Googling, but I have to ask you a question. because when he started to type in, my most recent Google search came up and it was, who's the inventor of mashed potato?
You know what? It's really, really dangerous to let anybody else look at your Google history. I don't care if it's, you know, porn or not. Mm-hmm. I can't look at my phone right now, but I feel like my Google history is just as embarrassing as like all of the different types of mashed potatoes.
Like, what do you Google? Oh, well, I'm sorry, Bethany. What are you talking about this week?
I am talking about the history of the sleepover game, Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board, because we briefly touched on it in our episode last week, and then I got this great article from our editor, Sharon. Sharon? Who's Sharon?
Who's Sharon? Are you cheating?
Who the hell's Sharon?
Are you cheating on her? Do you have another podcast that I don't know about?
She's our secret editor, Sharon. Our editor, Charlotte, sent me this great article, so we're going to be talking about that.
What is the most embarrassing thing that you've Googled recently, you think?
You know what? Let me pull up my Google search history.
I'm always Googling types of cancers. I'm always Googling types of foot funguses. Always. Do I have toe fungus? I do that a lot.
Okay. That's not, you're not alone. I looked up the LIRR schedule because I had to get to Long Island.
Yeah.
I looked up Imogen Poots because she has been showing up in like everything I've been watching lately. Imogen Poots is just in everything. But she has one of those faces that she looks like a lot of other people, and so you don't realize it's her.
I don't know if I know her. What did you watch lately that she was in?
Green Room. The horror movie Green Room, which she's in. And she's also dating this actor. Do you remember when I was obsessed with the show Grenfordshire?
Yes.
Where it's like a hot priest was solving crimes. That's her long-term boyfriend. Like, just she seems to be popping up. How often to water zinnias? Assassin's Creed. Just like a lot of really random things I'm looking at.
Well, mashed potatoes. That's what has been on my Google thing lately. Hello, newsflash. I finished Bly Manor and it was amazeballs.
So how many episodes is it?
It's like 9 or 10 episodes. So we did it. Okay. We finished it in about a week and a half.
Okay.
Doing like an episode a night. Sunday, yesterday, we watched like 4 episodes in a row. It's really excellent.
So I've seen 3.
Okay.
The first one was just sad, but then I decided to like power through the next two and they get less sad. Does it get more sad again or does it just keep being scary?
It gets less sad. The ending, there's a big twist. And
okay, that's don't say no, anything
I won't
else.
Say, I won't say. Also on Netflix right now, Hubie Halloween.
How is that? I've also seen ads for that. Who's in it? Is it an Adam Sandler flick?
I am not the biggest Adam Sandler fan. I have to admit that. But Hubie Halloween was really fun and lighthearted. The ending was fabulous. And it's a great movie if you just want to like peruse Pinterest or Twitter or Instagram while you're watching a movie but still get the gist of it.
What's it about? What's the broad strokes plot line of this?
It's about Salem, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And Hubie is sort of like, you know, the weird guy in town, which that's Adam Sandler's character.
Uh-huh.
And then like someone breaks out from a mental institution that's like gonna harm the town and all these weird things start to happen and they're looking for a murderer and like It's really a good time. I was skeptical at first, but it ended up being like a really good movie.
Did you see Murder Mystery?
I didn't.
So that's also Adam Sandler. It's him and Jennifer Aniston. And it's fine. It's cute, right? Like, it's not a bad movie. If you have, it's the same thing. Like, if you have it on in the background, it sounds like, I don't know if he got like a 3-picture Netflix Halloween deal or something, but he's, it's similar. They play this married couple who don't really do much anymore. Mm. And he sort of accidentally takes them on this European vacation, and they end up making friends at the very beginning with this really rich guy. And so instead of their boring bus tour, he's like, come on my yacht. Mm. And then someone gets murdered. There's been a murder. So it's cozy. It's on the
cozy. Scene. Oh, shoot. I just had a question to ask you and now I can't remember.
I'll wait.
Goodness gracious. What did you do this weekend? Oh, wait. I remember. Okay.
Better, because I didn't do much.
In the movie, there's a news anchor, this woman who plays a news anchor. She's actually a news anchor from Boston. And so they were like, okay, cool. Let's get a real news anchor in here to play a news anchor in our movie. She was just let go. Because apparently being in the Adam Sandler movie, Hubie Halloween, violated her contract.
Really?
It just showed up today on Reddit. Do you know that Reddit, that subreddit, Bye Bye Job?
No!
Where when people do stupid shit and they get caught, like, commenting in racist message boards or Karens. I'm not supposed to use the word. When privileged white ladies go into 7-Eleven and have a freak out and someone's filming them and then their job finds out. So Bye Bye Job is all things like that. And today in Bye Bye Job, they were reporting that the news anchor from the movie was let go because it violated her contract.
That's really strange because sometimes they do that. I mean, not, I wouldn't say like often, but it's not unheard of. Like the show, do you remember the show The Following that was on NBC and it was about a cult and it was awesome? Rosanna Scotto, who is a local news anchor here in New York, they had her being the news anchor. I played a news anchor for 2 episodes on One Life to Live, like a bunch of years ago, and because of my job in radio. So like, I feel like that's not unheard of. Maybe they didn't tell her employer. Maybe that was the big problem.
Yeah. Maybe they were just looking for an excuse to get rid of her, which happens more times than not.
Can I tell you something really interesting that I found on the internet over the weekend?
Duh.
Okay. So it's becoming more and more inevitable that we are all going to be in outer space. Not we all, but like all countries are going to end up in outer space, maybe at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so it made news over the weekend that NASA and a bunch of other countries launched some moon rules. Did you hear about this?
No.
So they have come up with, quote unquote, a common set of principles to govern the civil exploration and use of outer space. Okay. It is called the Artemis Accords. Hmm. And they are a shared vision for principles grounded in the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 to create a safe and transparent environment which facilitates exploration, science, and commercial activities for all of humanity to enjoy, blah, blah, blah. So far, 8 countries have signed the Artemis Accords. It's us, Australia, Canada, Italy, Japan, Luxembourg, and is it Luxembourg or Luxembourg?
I thought that was a city in Switzerland. I didn't know that it was.
Well, these are the founding members. Sorry. So maybe like Luxembourg.
Is Luxembourg?
And then all of these other big players.
Oh my God. I'm so embarrassed. Is Luxembourg a country?
I don't think so. I think you're right that it's.
It is. It's a country.
Is it?
Yeah.
We're idiots.
I'll tell you where it is. I'm an idiot. I'm a big time idiot. But you know what? I don't try to hide it ever. So
Is it pronounced Luxembourg? Anytime I don't know how to pronounce the word Berg, it's usually Burra.
Luxembourg is nestled in between Belgium, France, and Germany. It's really tiny. Super. Like Belgium is a small country. Luxembourg is like a fifth of the size of Belgium.
Huh. Well, they're helping found the Artemis Accords, the United Arab Emirates and the UK, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, here are the rules.
Okay.
Rule number one, everyone must come in peace.
Got it.
Okay.
I understand. It's simple.
Got to. Other rules. Mm-hmm. Secrecy is banned and all launched objects need to be identified and registered. No secret moon colonies. If you land on the moon, we all got to know about it.
Unless you're Matt Damon.
Unless you're Matt Damon, and you got to grow poop potatoes.
Poop potato.
Another rule. All members agree to pitch in with astronaut emergencies. So if Luxembourg has an astronaut and his leg is bleeding, like hard bleeding, and, you know, the United Arab Emirates have gauze, they got to help.
Everyone's got to pitch in.
Yeah, pitch in, like stone soup.
Sharesies.
Yeah, sharesies. Space systems must be universal, so everyone's equipment is compatible and scientific data must be shared.
Everyone's got to use an Apple.
Exactly, but they also can't be, like, upgrading their Apple all of a sudden and your charging cable doesn't work because now it's a different prong.
Yeah, because, you know, that gets so annoying. Like, I identify with that because I have the newest iPhone, and then I go out with my friends and they're like, let's take pictures. Use Kathleen's phone. I'm like, no, we should all have the latest iPhone. And then I end up having to do more work because I have to set up the photo because it's my phone that's taking the picture.
Okay, but not everybody has a spending issue and can afford a phone that they can't afford.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Historic sites must be preserved and any resulting space junk must be properly disposed. Use the garbage can.
Yeah, space junk.
Okay. Yeah. And rovers and other spacecraft cannot have their missions jeopardized by others getting too close.
6 feet.
If we go to the moon and we're like, we want to investigate the soil in a 10-mile radius of our camp, we can't have Luxembourg, like, sneaking in the dark of night and, like, you know, setting up camp within 9 miles.
Sneaking in the dark of night. I don't know why that popped in my head.
So anyway, so those are the moon rules. I like it that we have to have, like, pool rules, but for the moon.
Do we have to wear moon boots on the moon?
Up in the air or not, because there's no air.
Remember when moon boots were – I never had a pair of moon boots. Did you have a pair of moon boots?
Sure did. I had a pair.
You definitely did.
It had unicorns on it on the sides, and, like, the snow – the cold of the snow would make the unicorn appear or disappear. They were my very favorite things.
My favorite thing is pictures of celebrities in L.A. in moon boots. I'm like, you're not getting snow there, bitches. Like, you're just not. Before we wrap this up, I do want to remind everybody that we're doing a scary scary story in section 4. Also, we're going to hear from our listener, Tiffany, about why she is voting this year. Bethany.
Yes.
You be the judge.
Okay, I'll be the judge.
I was at the grocery store a couple days ago.
I'll allow it. I want to see where this goes.
And I was opening the eggs, okay? And I was like, oh, how many are cracked? There were some that were cracked. So I opened another one and I switched out the cracked out eggs into my container. So I had a full container of non-cracked eggs.
Okay.
Okay. And this woman came up to me. She didn't work at the supermarket. She starts yelling at me. She goes, you can't do that. Yes, I can. Why can't I do that? I can do that.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not going to buy a container. I'm actually doing the people at the supermarket a favor by switching out the cracked eggs.
Okay. Here's, okay. I have one follow-up question before I make my ruling.
Okay.
Did the container that you took uncracked eggs from, did it have any other cracked eggs in it?
Sure did.
It did. So, so when you opened it up, it already had, so basically two different containers both had cracked eggs.
Yes.
Okay, then I see no problem because instead of wasting two containers, now only one is being wasted.
Yes, yeah, so you're saying that I would have been in the wrong had I opened up a new container that was full of non-cracked eggs, like totally perfect eggs. Ah.
Yes, correct.
I like where you're going here.
Right, because then you're ruining one that's good. That one's good, but you found one that had other bad ones in it, and so you just made one whole bad one and one whole good one. I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah, back off, lady.
Back off.
Screw you. It's not like you were mind your biz.
Yeah, it's not like you were cracking eggs yourself and then putting the bad eggs in. Like, no, don't. No, she's fine. Leave. Tell her to calm down. She's at Trader Joe's. It's the happiest place on earth.
I don't want my omelet with a side of salmonella, lady.
No,
back off.
No, no, you were in the right. Don't you even worry. Don't lose any more sleep on that.
Thanks.
No probs.
Excellent.
A lot of people have kids who are learning from home right now. And as a parent, I would imagine it's really hard to know what your kids are doing and how to help them.
Yeah. And also, maybe you're doing school from home.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you're in college right now. Maybe you're a high school student. Do you think we have high school students listening to this podcast?
Absolutely. We're cool.
Yeah. We're hip.
Yeah. We love TikTok.
We're a bop.
Yeah.
Bartleby is a homework subscription service that helps you get your work done quickly and done correctly, and it's only $9.99 a month.
You can study smarter because you'll have access to millions of step-by-step textbook solutions, a searchable digital database of homework solutions, and subject matter experts on standby 24/7 to provide homework help when you need it.
And if you are writing a paper or your kids are writing a paper, and you're not the best at proofreading, slash you don't have time to proofread all of their work, Bartleby can help. It has a grammar checker and a plagiarism checker.
With Bartleby's all-in-one writing tool, you can reduce your mistakes, you can improve writing habits, and you can take those okay essays and transform them into stellar ones so you can submit your paper with confidence.
You get homework help in more than 30 different subjects, including business, science, math, and engineering, and you can ask homework questions and get answers from people who are experts in the subject matter that you're inquiring about within an hour, and that is 24/7.
And here's what's really cool too. If you have a question, you're probably not the only one who's ever had that question. Bartleby has a searchable database that gives us solutions to homework questions that other students have already asked. So you can quickly find what you need, save it for later, and then access it from a mobile device.
Yeah.
So here's the offer they're giving Acquired Taste listeners. You get 10 free homework questions for 30 days when you sign up at getbartleby.com/taste, and you have to put taste with a capital T.
Again, to test it out and get 10 free homework questions for 30 days, all you have to do is sign up at getbartleby.com/taste with a capital T. I'm going to spell that for you. That's get, G-E-T, Bartleby, B-A-R-T-L-E, BY.com/taste with a capital T.
Response times may vary by subject and question. All right, so Kathleen, I have to give full props to our editor, Charlotte, because she's the one who sent me one of the articles that's my source today.
Yeah.
Talking about the history of light as a feather, stiff as a board.
The thing that's only works when you're a child and you weigh 10 pounds and that's the only way you ever can raise anybody.
Okay, so I'm unconvinced that that's the case only because, so the physics behind it dictate that perhaps you could do it as an adult. But also, like, I believe in the, it's not magic, but, like, you know, I want to believe that it's magic. So, like, I still think you could probably do it.
Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary.
Yes. Who knows? There's no way of knowing.
Okay.
So, my main sources for this are The Secret History of Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board by Emily Temple. It's very straight to the point. Okay. On LitHub, which is the source that Charlotte sent. And then the longest title ever, Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board, dates back hundreds of years and may have ties to the plague, by Melissa Brinks, which is on Ranker.com. Mm-hmm. So even if you never actually played Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board, you probably know how to play it, especially because we did it last week with our computers on the pod.
I mean, any American child that went to a sleepover growing up knows how to play this game.
Yeah, and I feel like even if you never went to a sleepover and you never played it, you probably still have just absorbed generally how it's played.
Yeah.
But if you've never played it and you haven't ever done it, or you don't remember. So here's generally how it goes.
Okay.
One person lays down. They cross their arms over their chest like they're a mummy, like they're dead. And then you need at least three other people, but the more people, the better. Everyone else kneels in a circle around the dead person. And the person who is seated behind the dead person's head is the one who takes the lead.
Oh.
Yes, they're in charge. They then direct everyone else to tuck their index and middle fingers underneath the dead person's body.
I feel like a proctologist right now. Like,
yes.
Cough for me, corpse.
Yeah, exactly. Tickle, tickle. Okay, so then sometimes you try. So then sometimes it's like, okay, one, two, three, lift. And you never can lift the person because everyone's giggling and you're not coordinated and whatever.
Yeah.
Then, like we did last week, the leader tells a story about how the lifty died and then starts a chant, and that is meant to summon the dead person, the lifty's spirit, back into their body. And the chant goes, lays a feather, stiff as a board.
I imagine this might be even easier if the person were truly dead, because when rigor mortis sets in, then the subject is less wiggly.
Yeah, it's true. And they also say that the soul weighs like a certain number of ounces. So that's a certain number of ounces less that you have to lift as a seven-year-old.
No, it doesn't. The soul doesn't weigh a certain amount of ounces.
Yeah, there was like a test or some scientific study, I swear to God, where the body weighed just a few ounces less after the person died. I swear, I'll find it.
No,
I'll find
it. That's not science. That's not science.
Okay, so then you lift the person up. Now, it's not going to be like in The Craft where you lift them up to your shoulder height and then you let go and they float, right? That's not how it works. However, it works. It works.
Yeah, it works.
So this has gone back millennia, and people don't know exactly when this game, this ritual started, but the first written account of it reportedly comes from the diary of a 17th century Englishman whose name was Samuel, apparently it's pronounced Peeps.
Okay.
But it's written P-E-P-Y-S. It looks like Peppis.
Oh, so he's not heir to the Peeps sugar.
No.
Marshmallow throw.
No. Okay. He doesn't control a large business of delicious but tasteless chickens and hens and bunnies.
Just to interject here for a second. Mm-hmm. Did you know that Peeps, they're not making any Halloween Peeps this year? Like, they just can't with Corona. It's too much. People are really sad. I personally don't care. I think they're disgusting.
Wait a minute. They're not making any because they can't afford to, or they like aren't in the Halloween spirit?
I think it's just like factories, and because of COVID, they can't make any Halloween Peeps this year. Anyway, continue. Light as a feather.
Wow. Oh, man. This year sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like them, but I'm going to eat them.
Stale.
I'll eat them. I'm just not going to be happy about it, but it's something to put in my mouth, you know? So this Peeps dude, in his journal entry from July of 1665, mm-hmm. he mentions a story that his friend, Mr. Brisbane, told him.
Okay.
Where Mr. Brisbane saw a group of girls who were reciting a chant over a boy who was lying down. And the chant was in French. However, it roughly translates to, "Behold a dead body, still as a stone, cold as a marble, light as a spirit. We lift you in the name of Jesus Christ." And as they chanted this, they allegedly raised the boy into the air using only their fingers.
I mean, the whole religion thing makes it even creepier than just the regular light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Yeah, totally. But then if you think about it, especially like I'm the most familiar with Christianity because I was raised Lutheran. Like Christianity is a very creepy religion if you are looking at it from the outside. There's a lot of, there's demons. There's a lot of like outside forces swirling around people, getting involved in people's lives.
Yeah.
Literally, Jesus Christ gets resurrected. So if children are being taught this stuff from a young age, it doesn't seem unrealistic that this is something that just like is in their lives.
He came back from the dead.
Yeah. After three whole days. So then the girls then were able to allegedly do the same thing, but with a very large cook. A lusty fellow, a large cook who lived or worked in the house or whatever. And they did the same thing with him.
I'm thinking of the chef from The Little Mermaid. Le poisson. Light as a feather.
I was thinking about the chef from South Park.
Wait, in a French accent. How do I get into a French accent? Oui. Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Stiff as a board. Okay. So here's the interesting thing, though. So he wrote this in 1665. Mm-hmm. That was also the year of the Great Plague in London. And so by the time he wrote this in his journal, millions of people had already been killed. And that included a million people in France where this man was writing this. And so these children were probably seeing death all over the place. Yeah. One of the theories of, you know how like we think of traditionally of a ghost as a person in a white sheet?
Yes.
It's thought that that archetype may date back to this time when bodies in white sheets were literally all over the place because people were dying of the plague.
Oh.
Yeah. So if children are surrounded by death like that, that's going to sneak into their games. It's not, it makes total sense.
I never thought about why we say ghosts are white.
Me either.
Thought about that.
Never, ever.
Huh.
Just is like, oh, okay, it makes sense, right? Like a person in a white sheet looks like a ghost. Ooh,
well, hang on. I got to text my friends this fact. Oh, wait, shoot. I don't have my phone.
You can't use your phone because we're using your phone. Yeah. Okay, so it got passed down. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. According to these articles, isn't true levitation. I disagree, but whatever. It's physics. So the lift doesn't work on the first try because everyone is giggling. No one's coordinated. No one really believes it's going to happen. It's spooky and we're having fun. Mm-hmm. But when each member of the group is in the zone, the chant has made them sync up with each other. They're all kind of like in the same rhythm. And then everybody lifts at the exact same time. Everyone distributes the weight equally. A human body is heavy, but with 2 to 4 of your own fingers and everyone else's, with a lot of people lifting, your fingers are strong. So the world record for the heaviest deadlift with the pinky finger alone is 242 pounds.
What? What?
So you can, your fingers are strong.
Wait, 200 and what?
42 pounds, 242 pounds, according to this article.
Damn, girl.
Yeah. And also, my Midwestern comes out. So apparently there was a paper in 2007 that found that even if we don't remember an event super well, we're going to subconsciously or unconsciously recreate it in the way that we think it probably should have gone. So even if you weren't actually able to lift a person, you're going to remember that you did. Mm. You know, because we want to believe that it's magical.
Yeah.
So
it's like when you tell a lie and then you tell it so many times, it becomes the truth. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, yeah, that did really happen.
Okay. So once when I was like 16, I had a major I had a bit of a meltdown because I had been telling myself all of these stories that I had done to like make myself feel cooler. And then I realized I hadn't done any of them and I hadn't actually done anything. Like it was this really, I thought I was like, oh, and this one time that I was in a hot air balloon with all these people and like this other time that, you know, I was on set for this thing. And I just had this realization that I had never done any of that stuff. And it had all just been memories in my head that I had made up and started to believe.
Were you telling this to your friends?
No, it was like daydreams. And before I fell asleep, I would like daydream about, you know, being part of like a big fun group and doing all this stuff. And then like I realized none of it had ever happened. I got over it. Like it's fine. But it was like a moment of you can trick yourself into believing things.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be sad.
Bethany.
Whatever. Let's move on. Okay, so really quickly, very short. Here's two pieces of audio of people doing light as a feather, stiff as a board. So the first one is real. This is real life. These girls doing a sleepover, playing it. It's on YouTube. I'll link it below. The account is called The Sunset Mermaids. Mm. And the caption is, OMG, we did light as a feather, stiff as a board. And it worked. It was soon freaky. I dropped her after it started working. Lol. This is Brianna, by the way. That's the caption.
The Sunset Mermaids. Lol.
Yeah. So here's the audio of them playing light as a feather, stiff as a board, and then accidentally dropping the girl.
Wait, how old are they?
I'm not good at ages. 10?
Okay.
11? Tweens.
That makes sense. Only tweens would come up with the name the Sunset Mermaid.
Oh, it's a great name. Okay, so here's the audio of these girls.
She's ill. She's looking ill. She's looking worse. She's dying. She's dead. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Lift. So it was really cute, and then they dropped her.
Oh, that's cute. Until they dropped that girl on her.
Until they dropped her.
Damn back.
I love hearing that because it really is. If you've if you were never invited to a girl's sleepover, or you never just look whatever, you've never been inside one, that's really what it sounds like. And they're very fun. And I like hearing girls doing kind of morbid stuff.
Yeah.
Because kids are braver than we give them credit for. And they're, I think, less afraid of stuff like this than we give them credit for.
Well, it's all fun and games when you have a sleepover until your friends invite you over and then take you into the woods and tell you Slender Man's going to kill you. And then they kill you themselves.
Well, they attempt to. Yeah. I mean, there's that.
That little girl didn't die?
No, she survived. She's strong.
Wait, what?
Yeah, she got stabbed so many times, but like she was able to get out of the woods and get help. She's a rock star.
I should really watch that movie.
You're not missing much.
Okay.
You're not missing much. And then the other thing I'm going to play for you is, of course, the scene from the original Craft, 1996. Kathleen, I know you just watched it. Distributed by Columbia Pictures, directed by Andrew Fleming, starring Fairuza Balk, Neve Campbell, Robin Tunney, and Rachel True. Mm. Here is their light as a feather, stiff as a board, where they actually lift Rachel's character up to, like, their shoulders.
Okay. Now you take your index finger and your middle finger, and you put it under her like this.
I think I sprained my finger.
Shut up! Focus! Come on, you guys. Come on, ready?
Light as a feather, stiff as a board. 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 Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
You guys, it's not working. Whoa.
Shut up, or you're gonna fall.
Who's got the instructions?
Just keep concentrating.
I got clean towels for everyone.
Ah! Oh, my butt.
What's going on in here?
Nothing. Why?
Are you girls getting hot?
No, Mom.
There you go.
Well.
So we said it last week, Kathleen, but the first thing we're doing when we're allowed to touch each other is A, hug, B, play light as a feather, stiff as a board. We have to.
I would love to have a sleepover, but the adult version where we watch like a scary movie, we eat something reasonably healthy, maybe like quinoa jazzed up with some pesto, and we have a cup of tea and we go to bed at 9:30. That would be my ideal adult sleepover.
That's my dream. That's my dream. We take like we take CBD around 8:30, so we start just getting nice and chill.
And a couple melatonin gummies. There's like a little bowl of melatonin gummies on the coffee
Girl,
table.
You know, we're the most fun people I've ever met.
Mm, yeah, and then when we wake up in the morning, we eat fiber cereal
and prunes
and green juice.
Got to get the system moving.
Bethany.
Yes, Kathleen.
So now that we're recording this podcast via video and posting it, hopefully, I need some new makeup. And treating myself to new makeup sometimes can be really expensive. But that is why I love e.l.f. Cosmetics, because you can treat yourself and you don't have to spend a ton of money doing it.
I have been such a huge fan of e.l.f. Cosmetics for so long because for me, they were one of the first brands that didn't test on animals, but also you could get them. Like they weren't too expensive and you didn't have to find them at some upscale boutique. You can get them at Target. You can get them at Walgreens and Walmart.
Yeah.
And they don't test on animals and they're affordable.
I'm pretty sure I could get it at my grocery store too. So when I'm stopping in for some pasta and some avocados, I'm like, oh, I need a new mascara. Thank you, e.l.f. Cosmetics.
But their quality is still good. One of my favorite YouTube makeup gurus did a full face of e.l.f. Cosmetics. And he said he was shocked. The products looked so good on his face. And he was really surprised because the price point is so good.
Yeah. And a latte costs more than more e.l.f. Cosmetics.
Yep. So e.l.f. Cosmetics is all about bringing the best of beauty to every eye, lip, and face. That's what e.l.f. stands for, eyes, lips, face.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't realize that. Eyes, lips, face. Have you tried their liquid matte lipstick yet?
No, I didn't get that one. What color? Is that what you're wearing right now?
Yes, it's a very berry color. Isn't it beautiful?
You look stunning.
Thank you.
I love their poreless putty primer. This is one of the things that the YouTuber was saying he loved.
Mine is coming in the mail soon. I'm so excited to try it. What does it do?
For me, I have giant pores. Like you can like hide secrets in my pores. And I smooth it over basically everything and it makes the pores disappear. But some primers dry to almost a powdery finish, which feels really weird. This doesn't. Like it helps your makeup stick to your face, but it's not too sticky and it makes your pores go away.
Ooh.
Plus, we're heading into the holidays. e.l.f. products make the perfect gift. At these prices, you can put together a full face gift bag, a self-care package, or an entire skincare routine, and you're not going to have to sell your house to afford it.
So right now, as an exclusive offer for Acquired Taste podcast listeners, you can get 25% off of your e.l.f. purchase of $40 or more.
$40 is going to get you so much makeup.
Yeah.
So go to elfcosmetics.com/taste and use promo code TASTE to get this exclusive offer. It's the best deal out there right now, and you're not going to find it anywhere else.
That's promo code TASTE at elfcosmetics.com/taste for 25% off of your e.l.f. purchase.
So Kathleen, I have a Ring stick cam in my kitchen, so it allows me to see my front door and my window when I'm gone.
Yeah.
But another way that I really love to use it is that I get motion alerts and I always know it's my cats. And so then I can check in and watch videos of my cats. I save the videos and I send them to people because, look, if I'm not home, I want to be able to see what my cats are up to. It's my number one priority.
I love Ring cameras so much, Bethany. And that is one of the ways you can use your Ring camera. You know, what gets me about Ring camera is that I can keep an eye on my house, on my mom's house 24/7. But the videos from the Ring app are so easy to download. That is why, like, every now and then I'll see a parade of skunks and raccoons in my mom's backyard, and I download the video and text it to you. I'm like, look, Bethany, look at all the wildlife.
And then I add fun music to it, like dun 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 dun, dun because dun. Like, you know, it's a film. Look, if you're somebody like me and being away from home makes you anxious, Ring cameras are such a great option. You can put them inside your house so you can always check in and make sure everything's okay, because you know it is. But the anxious part of you just needs that little bit of reassurance.
Yes. Inside your house, outside your house, Ring has you covered to make you feel secure and safe in your home.
And Ring video doorbells let you answer the door and check in on your home anytime. You can keep an eye on your doorstep. You can even speak to delivery people when you can't come to the door.
Mm-hmm. And I love knowing when someone rings my mom's doorbell, because yeah. I get the notification on my phone and I'm like, huh, was that a package I sent to her house?
Yeah. And you're going to know when she decides to take a lover.
Mm.
Smart lighting brightens up those blind spots. You can make sure you always come home to a brightly lit house. Look, everything is fine. You're going to be fine. But it's nice to have a little bit of extra security and reassurance around there, especially right now. We're just all a little bit on edge. So get yourself a special offer on the Ring Welcome Kit by going to ring.com/taste.
The Welcome Kit includes the Ring Video Doorbell 3 and the Chime Pro. It's all you need to start building custom security for your home today.
Again, it's really easy. Just go to ring.com/taste.
That's ring.com/taste. Bethany.
Yes, Kathleen.
I have been thinking about mashed potatoes. I can't stop thinking about mashed potatoes.
Okay, what brought this on? I'm not against it. I love mashed potatoes.
What brought this on was that my mom and I were having a discussion about our Vitamixes.
Okay.
We have matching Vitamixes, as all mothers and daughters should, right?
Does she have the rose gold one too?
She's got the rose gold one too. And
she's a classy lady.
I'll tell you this. Yesterday, she told me that it was the best gift that I've ever given her.
That's so nice.
I know. So you can make soup in your Vitamix.
Yeah.
Toss in onions, potatoes, whatever. You have this beautiful sweet potato puree soup when you're done. So it got me thinking about potatoes. And I've been thinking about mashed potatoes kind of like a little bit before this as well, because I've been thinking about Thanksgiving. Like, do you know what you're doing for Thanksgiving yet?
Yes. We are supposedly right now having Dennis's parents over to his apartment. So it's just mm-hmm. going to be the four of us.
Yeah.
With like the windows open, mm-hmm. masks on, like super clean house. But I just saw an article that said if you can't do an outdoor Thanksgiving, you should consider not doing a Thanksgiving at all.
Really?
If it's with people who are not in your quarantine pod. So, yeah. So I don't know. But hopefully we are doing it with his parents. What about you?
So I'm like, Neil, wouldn't it be so amazing if we could just do Thanksgiving at home alone? Yeah. Just the two of us? Like, I've always dreamed of that.
And really?
Like, yes. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a mashed potato bar.
Okay. Wait, I'm so curious. I know I don't want to take you off topic, but like,
no.
Doesn't Thanksgiving with just the two of you feel a little lonely or no?
No. If you're going to do a Thanksgiving alone, I think this year is probably the year to do it.
Yeah.
Because I think probably a lot of people, their Thanksgivings are going to look a little bit different this year.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But just having the day off and watching the parade in my pajamas and not having to finish cooking and then pack it all up and get in a car and drive an hour away to visit this person and then get in the car again to visit another person.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm going to do a mashed potato bar. So I was like, oh, man, think about all the toppings you could have in a mashed potato bar. Like,
oh, my God.
Multiple different kinds of mashed potatoes, like sweet potato mashed potatoes and your regular mashed potatoes. And then like melted butter, sour cream.
Cheese.
Shredded.
Every cheese.
So many different types of shredded cheese. Onions, chives.
Au gratin. Could you do au gratin, which is my favorite kind of mashed potato or potato?
Broccoli, cauliflower.
Bacon.
Chili, bacon. Taco meat. You could do pulled pork.
You could. That's actually a really great idea.
You could do hot dogs.
All of the sour creams. Just like a big bowl. Did you already say sour cream?
No. Breakfast sausages.
Oh. Dinner sausages.
Dinner sausages. Caramelized onions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Chimichurri sauce. Oh, man.
You know what you could do, too, is you could get those delicious potato skins that are like chips.
Mm.
And like you could do those. So it's sort of like a meta thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you put like them in the, you know, in the mashed potato. It's like a little weird.
So it got me thinking about potatoes. Where did potatoes come from?
The ground.
No. So potatoes came. Originally, potatoes were first found in Peru.
Shut up.
Yeah. Peru. As far back as 8,000 8,000 BC.
Jeez.
In the 1500s, Spanish conquistadors, they went to Peru. They went from Spain to Peru. They discovered potatoes. They brought them back to Europe.
Nice.
And that is how potatoes are so popular. It's really a South American food.
Okay.
But anyway, there's this guy. His name is Sir Walter Raleigh. He brought them back to Ireland. He planted like 40,000 acres of these potato findings in Cork, which is sort of like in the southeast of Ireland, and it turned things around for Europe after they caught on. Potatoes are highly nutritious.
Okay.
They mitigate the effects of diseases like scurvy.
I didn't know that. You always think of oranges for scurvy.
I know. Tuberculosis, measles, dysentery. And because people weren't starving anymore, there were higher birth rates. There was lower mortality rates.
Holy cow.
And potatoes really what can be accredited as the reason why there was a tremendous population explosion in Europe, particularly in the British Empire.
So Sir Walter Raleigh is sort of like the Matt Damon of Europe.
Yeah.
Because in The Martian, Matt Damon had a potato explosion, which is the only way he survived. Spoiler alert.
When he was planting potatoes in his own poo, which is...
Yeah, poo potatoes.
That's cool with me.
Yeah.
And here's a fun fact I learned from Wikipedia about potatoes.
You are a dazzling conversationist at a cocktail party, my dear.
There are 5,000 different types of potatoes, but...
Shut the fuck up.
On top of that, there are also 200 types of potatoes that grow in the wild. Wild potatoes. Where are these potatoes growing? I'm an avid hiker.
Underground. We don't see them. They're hidden. That's a whole hidden economy.
Like, I want to know where's the best spot to go foraging for wild potatoes.
You know what? That should be our fourth thing on our bucket list to do after quarantine. Mm-hmm.
Wild, potato. So in terms of who grows the most potatoes in the whole world, China. China grows 26% of the world's potatoes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Is their soil just the most happy for the potatoes?
I don't know. You know, I didn't do that deep of a dive
into
this.
No, it's fine. You shouldn't have, and that's okay.
But here's a fun fact to bring to your next date or Zoom hangout or whatever. Americans, on average, consume 110 pounds of potatoes every single year.
Each 110 pounds of potatoes?
Yeah.
That's incredible. I believe it. They're delicious.
It's the most popular vegetable in America.
Well, because also it's so versatile. As you were saying, you know, you can pair it with a breakfast sausage. You can pair it with a creme. You can you can make it with a cheese.
Yeah.
You know, you can slice it thinly and make it into something, or you can, you know, slice it thickly and make it into another thing, or you can like whip it.
Or
you can whip it real good.
Shake it.
Yep.
Bop it.
Yep. You can punch it. You can twist it.
Okay. So potatoes. We're doing the history of potatoes, right?
Yeah.
But what about mashed potatoes?
Fuck. Bring it.
So do you know that there's a job that's a food historian? Do you know you can grow up to be a food historian?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So food historians generally credit the French for the cultivation of mashed potatoes.
Okay.
There is this guy. His name is Antoine Auguste Primitier, maybe.
Nailed it.
18th century.
Okay.
He was an army pharmacist, and he is generally acknowledged as the first European to promote potatoes as an economical and healthy food.
Huh.
So France, people were starving in France in the 1760s, and the potato was easy to grow, cook, and consume, and digest, and it was cheap, like dirt cheap.
Literally. Get it? Because it grows underground.
So it wasn't long in the 1760s before potatoes became really popular. Food historians think that it was back then that, like, the notion of mixing potatoes with butter and cream and stuff, the first maybe mashed potato was made. But the first cookbooks that show evidence of mashed potatoes, that comes from American cookbooks.
Shut up.
Yes. Yep.
You know what? Those French getting credit for things that we did, because I'm sure that we haven't ever taken credit for something that another culture did. Nope. Not us.
Not us.
We're America.
In a second, we're going to go over some of the recipes, like the first early recipes for mashed potatoes. Ooh. So exciting.
Ding, ding, ding. But does it involve a full pigeon?
No, it doesn't. Thankfully. Okay. Ew. If you were...
You never watched that video I sent you, and it makes me sad.
Oh, what was the video?
It was that woman who pretends that she's in, like, Victorian England as a cook, and she teaches you how to cook old Victorian things, and one of them is a pigeon pie.
That's right, yeah.
And it literally has pigeon claws coming out of the top of it.
Will you include that in our show notes?
Yes. It's awful. It's awful.
So I can access our show notes and and finally watch it. Okay. Food historians also say that potatoes got so popular that by the 1800s, you could buy potatoes as street food in London.
That's so trendy. It's like Williamsburg.
You could buy a little potato pie on the side of the road in London.
Mm-hmm. And you can like hold, you can like eat it as you're like wandering with your Dickensian street mates, mm-hmm. you know, and asking for farthings.
And then like fancy cooks in London were like, wait a minute, we can make fancier things with potatoes than just potato pie. So it was London English chefs, British chefs that we can accredit for things like dumplings.
You can also make it into like a crepe, into like a, because in Norway we make lefse, which is potatoes. It's like a potato crepe. And you put butter and sugar on it, roll it up and eat it.
I didn't realize lefse was made from potato.
Sure is.
A potato.
The potato is amazing.
Potato. Okay. Here's a potato recipe from 1747 from an American cookbook.
Okay.
Boil your potatoes.
Okay.
Peel them. Put them into a saucepan. Mash them well.
Okay.
2 pounds of potatoes equals a pint of milk, a little salt. Stir them together. Take care that they don't stick to the bottom. Then take a 1/4 pound of butter, stir it in, serve it up.
Delicious.
It's not that much different than what we do with potatoes today, right?
No. I was expecting something very, I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting like, you know, 7 pounds of like lard curd.
And maybe like a little Puritan prayer.
Yeah, totally.
All mixed in. By the way, a lot of these old timey recipes, that when they say take off the skins, they say take off the jackets. Potato skins were originally known as potato jackets, and that is the dang cutest thing that I've ever heard in my whole life.
Are you picturing a zipper? I'm picturing a little zipper.
Like a Mr. Potato, like a little Mr. Potato zipper.
Yeah, like a little, like he's a little zipper, and you like take it off, and you're just like, he's white underneath and chilly.
Okay, here is a recipe from 1857.
Okay.
Having boiled the potatoes till bender, edit, what?
Tender, maybe?
Tender. Okay, yeah, there's a typo on that website.
Those old like letters sometimes look weird too because they're looped, so maybe the person like misread it.
I should reach out to foodtimeline.org and tell them that their potatoes are on a bender. Okay, having boiled the potatoes until tender, drain them until they're very dry in a colander, aka a colander?
I think, yeah, a colander.
Mash them smooth with a potato beetle. What is a potato beetle?
A beater?
A beetle.
How do you spell beetle?
Oh my God, maybe it's a beater.
How, what, is this like food dot,
this is
dot like,
Inc. Okay, foodtimeline.org. Okay, yeah, a potato beetle or beater.
Okay.
And then once they're nicely mashed, add gradually plenty of fresh butter and then some cream or some rich milk. Is that like whole milk?
Yeah, probably like a thick, yeah, whole, rich, straight from the teat milk.
Do not spoil the potatoes by putting any water in them. Do not put any water in them when you're mashing.
Okay.
And then put them into a deep dish, mold them, and then brown them with a salamander.
What's a salamander? What?
No, this is 1857, Bethany.
See, this is a little bit more in line with what I was originally expecting you to hear.
A salamander. You
know,
yeah.
So that must be some sort of cooking implement that we don't know.
Here's a little note. A potato beetle is a type of mallet. Mm.
Okay, right on. Do they say what a salamander is?
Nope, they don't say what a salamander is.
Okay, great.
Oh, that'd be really sad. You brown them with an actual salamander.
Oh, like if like you know that it's brown enough when the salamander is dead because it's like, oh.
Have you ever made mashed potatoes before?
Yes.
Okay.
I have.
Do tell. Did you make vegan potatoes?
No. I think I, don't get me wrong, it's been years. But I do have, if you can see my KitchenAid mixer here, it has mixed at least 2 batches of mashed potatoes. I think I think I just went by the book, like cream, butter, potatoes, salt, pepper. Yeah.
Do you remember what kind of potato you used?
Idaho. Brown
russet,
not the maroon ones, but the brown ones.
So there's a little bit of drama, and the reason I ask you this is because there's drama.
What? There's drama?
Drama. Some people prefer their mashed potatoes with russet potatoes, which I believe are the type that you get from Idaho.
Idaho. Yeah.
Potato hoe.
so pleased.
Okay. And then others are like, Yukon Gold. But Yukon Gold take a little bit. Anyway, I'll tell you about that drama later. Okay.
Okay.
Here's our last old-timey mashed potato recipe.
Okay.
1934. This comes from Mystery Chef's Own Cookbook by John McPherson. It was published by a publishing company in Philadelphia, 1934.
Oh.
The way you serve mashed potatoes shows whether or not you are an artist at the stove.
Good Lord, that's a lot of pressure. It's like an omelet.
Never serve watery mashed potatoes, nor should there be a lump of potato that is unmashed when you are serving.
Right. Okay, that seems fair. But I don't like them too whipped either because that makes me nervous.
Well, there's a difference between mashed potatoes and whipped potatoes, and I researched that, and I'm going to get to that in just a second.
Okay, go ahead.
The cookbook goes on to read, here's the way I cook mashed potatoes. First, remove every eye.
Yeah.
Do you really need to?
No, you don't have to.
If you don't know what the eye is, it's the black speck from the potato that is on the jacket. Okay. So boil in a covered pot.
Okay.
So, okay, yeah, covered pot. Start in cold water, put the potatoes in, and then when it boils, turn the flame on low for a slow boil. You're going to do this for 30 minutes.
Okay.
And then you're going to drain all of the water. Then you're going to put the potatoes through a ricer, a potato ricer. Okay. I'm actually surprised that they had potato ricers in 1934.
I don't know.
Rice the potatoes in the pot that they are boiled in after you've dumped out all the water. Then add a level tablespoon of butter for every two potatoes.
Okay. So you have to keep track, which is good to know ahead of time.
Yeah. Then add a little milk and then place the pot over a slow flame and beat the potatoes with the butter and the milk in there vigorously with a large spoon. The more you beat, the better your potatoes will be. The amount of butter and milk to be used should be decided by the artist at the stove.
Okay, calm down with the artist. Do they mention, does this person mention salt?
No.
Interesting.
No, how could you do that? How could you make mashed potatoes without salt? That's disgusting.
I wonder if the butter was different then. Like maybe they added salt to the butter already and so you didn't need it.
Maybe. But then how do you make a cake with salty butter? You can't.
I don't know.
That.
I don't know.
Listen, John McPherson, an artist at the stove, it's too much, way too much pressure.
Yeah, and also calm down. Like, calm down.
Calm down. All right. Do you ever eat fast food mashed potatoes?
It's been a while. I'm trying to think of who does it. Does Wendy's have?
No, they've got a baked.
They have a baked potato. Mm. I think the closest I've come is like when bodegas have like buffet lines, which are real questionable, but like I love them.
Yeah.
I'll sometimes get mashed potatoes out of that.
So lucky for us, Insider.com tasted all of the fast food mashed potatoes and they have a clear winner.
Who is doing all the fast food mashed potatoes? I didn't even know they existed.
That's the type of job I want.
Yeah.
I want to go and try all the mashed potatoes. So they went to Popeyes, they went to Church's Chicken, they went to KFC, they went to Boston Market, and they went El Pollo Loco.
Okay. So it's like it's chicken places, of course.
Yeah, chicken places.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The winner was Boston Market.
Good on you. Yeah, BM.
They said BM. They said Boston Market tastes like real potatoes, and that's because they actually do use real potatoes. Some of these fast food places use fake or instant potatoes, and the person reviewing it said that they were fluffy with just the right amount of lumpy, and they had spices in their potatoes for a little extra kick.
I mean, look, I can see why places would use like a powdered or an instant mashed potatoes.
It's
cheaper. Mashing potatoes is really hard. Yeah. It's a very work intensive job. This is the job where if you have children, you're putting them to work doing some part of the potato process.
I actually like a little lump in my potato now and then.
I do too. Yeah. Something to chew on.
I think it's my favorite food at the dining room table.
During Thanksgiving or just in general?
Oh, sorry. During Thanksgiving.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm a stuffing / dressing person first and foremost, and then a mashed potato, and then the orange kind, the sweet potato.
With the mallows.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, and then cranberries. So that's like really all I want.
Yeah. The best potatoes for mashing. Here's where the drama comes.
Drama.
Okay. Bonappetit.com, who I wholeheartedly trust because just the phrase Bon Appetit is very fancy.
Yeah, it's so fancy.
They say that Yukon Gold potatoes are the best for mashed potatoes because they get really creamy. They're just like a generally creamy potato.
Okay.
They have the most uniform flesh. They cook through. They aren't grainy or watery or mushy and whatever. They taste like butter without even butter being added.
Okay. I see that.
Some people like russet potato mashed potatoes better because they cook faster.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
But they're a little bit mealy.
Yes, I will agree with that.
Okay, so SeriousEats.com says mealy russet potatoes have cells that are ready to fall apart from each other, meaning you don't have to cook them as long to get a relatively smooth consistency. It also means like less work in the kitchen. But less work means that they're starchier, which means they can be a little bit goopier because you aren't really breaking down those starches quite enough.
Okay.
Waxier Yukon Gold potatoes require longer cooking and they're much harder to separate. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, but it really does. Like, it's also, like you said, there's a difference between, I guess, whipped and just and mashing.
Yes.
Because I want something. I don't want it to be too creamy because it makes me feel like I'm eating a meringue.
Yeah.
That tastes like a potato. And if you bite into a meringue that tastes like a potato, you're having a bad day.
So, girl, I got you covered.
Okay, thank you.
Because I looked up the difference between mashed and whipped potatoes.
Yeah.
A mashed potato is smushed by hand with a fork or a potato masher with a little bit of buttermilk added. It still is a little bit lumpy. A whipped potato, they're done in the blender, so they have a smoother consistency.
Yeah. So it's just, it's easier to make a whipped potato, I guess.
I mean, but then it goes on to say that mashed potatoes are just mashed with a masher and they don't have cream or milk or butter. So are we really eating whipped potatoes on Thanksgiving?
Wait, so if you do a mashed potato by hand, you're not supposed to put butter. Well, so how does it, that doesn't taste good, I would imagine.
I don't know. Bethany, we can all write complaint letters to flutter.com because that's where I got that little tidbit.
That's not a real website.
All right, so I Googled best mashed potato recipe.
Okay.
Best.
Best.
A couple came up.
Best.
Best. And also, best apparently is really good for being nonspecific about your mashed potato recipe because SEO works.
Fair.
Works, yeah.
Did you find, can I ask a quote? Did you find a recipe that started with like a 3 or 4 paragraph story?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Do you know how many life stories I read when I was researching mashed potatoes?
Got to get that word count up.
There was someone named Hannah and then her grandmother. This is her grandma's recipe, but then her other grandmother, like her mom's grandmother and her dad's grandmother, they would make different types of mashed potatoes. And every year there was like a fight. And I'm like, okay,
get to the butter part.
Okay. Also, there's a lot of drama between soaking or rinsing your potatoes. Some people like to soak them and they cut them into really small pieces to wash away the excess starches.
Sure, okay.
And then some people cook them in their jackets. Some people like to peel them before they boil them. It's just,
yeah,
I don't know. I'm overwhelmed.
You know what? Look, don't get overwhelmed. You got to do what is right for you. And you're making a mashed potato bar. So look at even more options than you realized you had.
Yeah, okay. Well, Run Recipe says you got to add cream cheese. Yum, yum, yum.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I used to eat full bricks of cream cheese with a little brown sugar sprinkled over like a frosting.
I just thought of something really good, Bethany.
What?
Sweet potato mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
Made with pumpkin spice cream cheese.
Fuck.
Holy shit. I'm a genius.
I think I'm pregnant. That's happening.
Okay, this recipe. Shit, where did I find this recipe? It was the first one that came up and now I deleted the link. It was from Give Me Some Oven. Give Me Some Oven.
Good name.
You get it? Like, give me some lovin'.
No, I love that. That's a good name.
She says that she's a big fan of mixing Yukon Golds and russets together.
See, yeah, you don't have to pick one side or the other. Everyone can get along.
She puts,
I think that's great,
garlic in her mashed potatoes and fine sea salt.
Yes. Great. I like that.
On the top, she sprinkles some chopped chives or some green onions for extra color and deliciousness.
Chives are the best.
I think that purists might not be with this potato recipe from Give Me Some Oven.
You know what? I just hope that she has the strength to withstand the haters. Mm-hmm. You know, there is going to be some blowback, but if she stands firm in her beliefs, she's going to find her tribe.
She's okay.
Yeah.
Smitten Kitchen, my favorite cooking website of all time. Great cookbook.
Yeah.
SmittenKitchen.com. She makes, and now you're about to orgasm when you hear this. She makes brown butter mashed potatoes.
Oh my God. I'm so hungry.
First of all, brown butter is just a word that makes me instantly want to do it because anything made with browned butter is like phenomenal.
Is it just butter that's been browned?
Yeah, it's butter that you put in a pan on very, very, very low heat and you have to stand there at the stove and you're stirring constantly and then it starts to turn this like golden color. It's like right before clarified butter because you know clarified butter is butter that's cooked down until it's clear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But brown butter is like golden.
Brown, okay, great. Love it. I'm into it.
Yes. Oh, I made brown butter Rice Krispie treats once.
Holy, oh my God.
Moses. She does it with brown butter, and she's a purist.
Okay.
Buttermilk, sea salt, black pepper, and some brown butter. That's it. That's what she does. I'm going to try that.
Mm. That sounds great. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of prep work depending. Mm. I mean, if you have to clean them, and then if you want to de-eye them, and if you want to like take off their coats or jackets or whatever or not. But I feel like at the end of the day, it's actually a fairly easy recipe.
Well, do you put it in the blender? Do you mash by hand? Do you put it through a potato ricer? Like, there's so many different techniques.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but
what is the best technique?
If you're, well, and I think it's what is the best technique for you? You know, like for me, I'm lazy. So for me, it's a blender. But like if you have a lot of children, you have a lot of labor, you know, mash it by hand.
Get those little kids. I mean, I don't think child labor laws apply on Thanksgiving. I don't think they do.
No. And I don't think they apply in your own home. You put those kids to work. Mm-hmm. They're there. You have children so that you have labor, like farm hands. And do you have a farm? No. Well,
no.
It's Thanksgiving.
But you have a kitchen.
Your kitchen is your farm. Yeah.
And your fridge is the farm animal.
Yep.
That keeps everything cold.
Yep, exactly.
Now I'm stressed out. I have so many different types of potatoes to try and make and like figure out what the best recipe is. But
I think the thing for you, I think what you should do is like, you know, when you buy nylons, like when you buy, you know, when you buy pantyhose, like no nonsense control top, like you flip it over and the package has this extensive square grid telling you what size you are. Mm. And it like, it's like, well, if you're 5'4", but you weigh like 270, then you're going to be like a Q, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you need to do that with all of your potato types and ingredients and like fill in different color squares to help you figure out which is going to be applied to which. Do you know what
I'm saying?
How
much time you have too.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's a third graph of like how much time you have.
This infographic would go viral as hell.
I think you should make it.
Wow.
Because you're not going to be doing enough with a potato bar. I also want you to make an infographic.
Yeah. To finish up this segment, I was going to read you what the IdahoPotatoMuseum.com says about why Idaho is the best place to grow potatoes, but I'm just not.
Why not? Read it.
Okay. Idaho's unique environment provides nearly the perfect growing conditions for potatoes. The soil is clear, there's clean water, there's clean air, and the climate in Idaho makes the potatoes superior to any potato growth elsewhere in the United States. Summer days along the Snake River Valley are sunny and warm, combined with Idaho's cool nights provide ideal climate conditions for the growing and production of potatoes. Idaho's rich volcanic soil is ideally suited for potatoes. Is there volcanoes in Idaho that I don't know about?
I never heard of one, not ever once.
Potatoes seem to grow better in a light soil like volcanic ash that has a rich supply of trace minerals and appears to be a necessary thing.
This is so boring.
Idaho's scenic mountains collect the snow throughout the winter months, and in the spring, the snow melts and flows into the reservoirs above the potato grounds, where water reservoirs are used to irrigate potatoes and irrigation systems can be programmed to the correct amount of... Lastly, Idaho farmers, they have generations of experience and knowledge of growing potatoes. Pioneering research to improve soil storage and processing have made it the world's leaders in potatoes.
I was originally going to say that you sounded really sad as you were reading that, but the more you read it, I think you accurately said it the way the original person said it. Because I think that... Because it sounds boring and sad.
So if you guys would like to put yourself to sleep at night, I invite you to visit IdahoPotatoMuseum.com. Oh. Okay, we should not end this on such a sad note. On three. Okay, you ready, Bethany? Mm-hmm. On three. One, two, three. Potatoes!
Oh, I didn't know what we were saying. Try again.
One, two, three.
Potatoes!
Bethany, stop what you're doing right now. Go to Rothy's.com. You need to see their new ankle boot style.
Okay, so I have been looking for years for a sleek black boot that I can just walk around the city in. It's like an ankle length. It's not going to be too bulky. This is the boot I've been looking for.
It's so chic, and it's made with Rothy's signature eco-friendly materials, aka repurposed plastic water bottles and marine bottles that don't cause any blisters, no break-in time.
It's crazy because they are able to stitch together these shoes in one piece or a minimal number of pieces so that you're not getting those seams that cause blisters and a lot of rubbing. And they have the cutest styles. Whether you're looking for a classic black slip-on with like a pointed toe or a rounded toe, or you're looking for a statement piece, something like a bright pop of color, Rothy's has it.
Yes. And they have bags now too, and masks.
And like Kathleen said, because everything is made from recycled water bottles and marine plastic, these shoes and bags are machine washable. If you get them dirty, You throw them in the washing machine, wash on cold, let them air dry. You have a brand new pair of shoes.
I love companies that prioritize sustainability, and that is Rothy's main goal.
So I have the loafer in mocha, which is like this really beautiful light chocolate color, and it goes with everything, mm-hmm. and they're so comfortable. And Kathleen, you have like 17 pairs, right?
I have like a couple pairs of the sneakers in all different colors, and it's my favorite fall sneaker because you know when it's like kind of hot outside and then socks make your feet really sweaty, but also you still want to wear a sneaker and you don't want your toes to show because you haven't been to the get a pedicure in a long time. Yeah. That is why I love the Rothy slip-ons because they like help keep my feet cooler, but also don't show my toes.
So check out all of the amazing shoes and bags available right now at rothys.com/taste.
That's rothys.com/taste. And I'm going to spell it for you. rothys.com/taste.
Style and sustainability meet to create your new favorites. Head to rothys.com/taste today.
Oh, that ankle boot.
Last week we did a YA vote first, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so should we start with a scary story then?
Sure, but like, Bethany, we're on a date right now. You got to sauce me up right before you get into the meat and potatoes.
Sorry, I'm not good at this, hosting a podcast. I don't know.
Okay, before we get to our scary stories and why our taste buds are voting this week, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
When was the last time you checked in with yourself?
Ooh, like in what way?
Well, I'm thinking that I need to start doing every single month a mid-month check-in.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah. What are you checking in regarding? You know, like
just like
mental health.
Yeah, how life is going, how I'm feeling. You know, Glennon Doyle, the author, mm-hmm. writer Glennon Doyle. We've talked about her before on this podcast.
Yeah.
I was listening to her latest book last night, Untamed by Glennon mm-hmm. Doyle. And she has this concept of a touch tree, which is like every time you start to lose yourself, you go back to whatever item or idea or place it is that anchors you. And that is your touch tree. And you check in with yourself. Like, do you have something like that in your life?
No, not really.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. I mean, I've recently had to start writing my food down again because my eating disorder is back and I've mentioned it. Like, I think I had 6 months of handleableness, mm-hmm. like in quarantine with mm-hmm. my eating disorder. Like, if it had just been 6 months, I would have been fine. But like month seven is when I really was, it was all too much. And so for me, writing down what I'm eating so that I can show it to my nutritionist and we can talk about it and mm-hmm. we can like look at habits and look at behaviors and see like, well, look, you said you felt tired and run down all day, but mm-hmm. look at what you ate for dinner the night before. Nothing.
Yeah.
So this all explains itself. And that clarity in black and white helps me feel very grounded.
Yeah.
So that I think is the closest version I have right now. It's the closest thing to me getting rid of the noise and touching down concretely on what makes me feel like I am present, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. I just bought a piece of artwork. It's this woman. it's a woman. And I think I'm going to put it like in my little den that I've been using as my office. I think I'm going to put it on the wall. So every time I'm sitting here doing work, she's going to be my touch tree, my like symbolic touch tree. So I can turn and talk to her.
Yeah, that's great.
I think that's what I'm going to do because I'll tell you what, I've been struggling so much lately. I had to stop watching the news. Like, I'm a news junkie.
Yeah.
And ever since Donald Trump got corona and then he comes back and says things like, oh, it's no big deal, or oh, like I'm stronger than ever, I just feel like my heart breaks again and again and again every single day.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, because I miss my dad.
Yeah.
Or I miss the good parts of my dad. So
for those of you who may be listening backwards, Kathleen's dad died from corona.
And so I was like listening to this thing by Glennon Doyle last night, this idea of a touch tree, of having something that like anchors you, something that you can look at. And then, you know, it reminds you to check in with yourself. And I just thought it was like a really interesting mm-hmm. concept. Oh, my God. I did not mean to cry. I'm such a baby.
No, you're not. Oh, my God. No, not at all. Kathleen, this is an unprecedentedly stressful time. People are barely holding it together. Creators that I watch on YouTube are barely holding it together, because I like to watch people who are pretty transparent about how they're feeling, yeah. even if that's not the point of what they yeah. do. I watched this woman, Caitlin Doughty, and she's like an undertaker, but she's like very fun.
That's her job.
Yeah, that's her job.
Amazing.
And she's been saying during her videos at the end, she's just like, everything's fine. I'm fine. And she's clearly not fine. Well, so it's creeping in there.
We should all get a touch tree.
That's a really good idea.
And
do you feel okay posting a picture of the lady painting?
Yeah, of course.
I would love to see it.
At least it'll get me to hang it, because it's been sitting it's been sitting on my mantle unhung for such for all of Corona.
Same. I have a picture I bought at Housing Works, the thrift store, because I liked the frame. I have nowhere to put it. It's yeah. sitting on my floor. Yeah. It's floor art.
Oh, I love that.
Floor art's the best.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's get into our letter from a taste bud, Tiffany, as to why she's voting this election season.
I voted in every election since I've been of age, but this year it's different. I was raised in a conservative Christian home where it was believed that a Democratic vote is not equal to a Christian vote. In my household, it was simply impossible for a Christian to support a Democratic candidate, even if they seemed to be a better fit. Even though I was very pro-equal rights, my faith was just as important to me. Voting is something that's done in private, but with God as my audience and a skewed view of what He thought of me, voting wasn't an effort to stand up for others or to take a stand for what was important. It was an effort to quietly prove how faithful I was. And I honestly believe that my vote wouldn't make a difference in the election anyway. It took years of me living outside of my home to realize that if I believed in a loving and gracious God, why wouldn't I actively want to live by the same example? So voting is simple. Because I love God, I'm going to love the people He made. Period. To me, that looks like standing up for others who believe differently than me, and recognizing their background and beliefs is valid and valuable just like mine. It looks like opening my heart so there's enough room to change my mind. It looks like recognizing my privilege and using my voice to shout for justice next to those who are tired from shouting it for their whole lives. It looks like fighting for equality and humanity, for LGBTQIA folks, for women, for minorities, for immigrants, for everyone. It looks like demanding healthcare for all, even if I'm not sick. And it looks like setting the table for everyone, because everyone deserves a seat. I'm voting because I love people, and loving people does make a difference.
Kathleen, I'm so glad that we're doing this, because I had never heard of this before. Mm-hmm. This is opening my eyes to a lot. I did not realize that there are people who equate Republicanism with being a good Christian or showing like you're voting for God. That's so interesting.
Yeah. And my mom and I often butt heads on political issues, and I feel like my mom is confused about this. I feel like she's a devout Catholic, and I think that she feels like voting Republican is voting for Jesus. But I'm like, who would Jesus vote for? Let's be real about this.
I'm wondering where that – I'm Googling where that connection happened. Republican
I
mean.
I think it stems from anti-abortion and keeping marriage between a man and a woman.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Look, and those values are really important. I don't disagree that if you believe that, you know, marriage should last forever and marriage should be, you know, should look a certain way.
Bethany, are you really saying you don't disagree?
No. No, let me finish what I'm saying. Let me finish what I'm saying, though. I understand that if those are things that you really strongly believe, then that's important for you to vote for. I understand it. Where I disagree is that people are being hurt by those who think in a certain way about what marriage should look like and, you know, all of that. I'm of the belief that if you want to live your life a certain way, you can do it as long as you don't hurt anybody else. Two men getting married, two women getting married, two non-binary people getting married, that's not actually hurting you. And so that's where I start to disagree. I never understood that when you were voting, you were really voting between you and God, and you were showing God that you were a good Christian. I had no idea. That's so interesting.
You know, I used to identify as a Republican, and I don't even think I knew what that meant. Does that make sense? Like,
totally. Yeah.
Back in high school, and I majored in political science, and I, I just didn't have enough life experience to really understand. And politics were not something that was on the forefront like it is today. And I used to listen to a lot of conservative radio. I remember in college, I was driving somewhere and I'm in my car and I'm listening to some conservative radio talk program. And it was about stem cells. And I thought, okay, well, if someone has to get an abortion because their life is in danger if they have this baby, and then we can use the stem cells from that aborted fetus to save other people's lives. I was like, what is wrong with that? And and now it's even so much more relevant to me because I have a husband who has multiple sclerosis, and stem cells will probably be the key behind future cure for that if there ever is a cure for multiple sclerosis. And I remember in that moment, I was like, I don't think I'm a Republican. <You know?
laughs> Well, and it's also now we are at a point where the loudest mouths in the Republican Party are dangerous and are saying very dangerous things. And, you know, we got a very negative review on iTunes because of this belief that I have that the people in charge right now are dangerous. But I stand by it because scary, awful things have been happening and this will only continue.
Yeah.
And so that's the other thing is, Kathleen, you may have been a Republican back in the day because it wasn't always this extreme.
I think for me it was more about being fiscally conservative. I always believed in gay marriage. I always believed in women's rights. And I remember in high school, I had an English teacher who was talking to the class about politics. And she's like, well, are you guys Republicans or Democrats? And we all looked at each other like, what does that even mean? And after the class, I was talking to her. She goes, well, do you believe in women's rights and a woman's right to choose? And I was like, yes, Ms. Caruso, absolutely. And then she said something else and asked me a couple of questions. She goes, well, you're a Democrat. And I went home and told my mom. My mom was furious.
Did you have a bed to sleep in that night or nah?
I did have a bed to sleep in that night. And, you know, I saw this thing on Instagram the other day that was like, if you can't get down with supporting LGBTQ rights, you should not have a child. And I wholeheartedly agree with that, because if your child is born into this world and that child is a man who loves men, or that child is born a woman but inside feels like a man and wants to change their gender, or if you have a child who doesn't identify with any gender, you should not have a child if you are going to torture that child for the way that they were born, the way that God made them.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
And I don't want to be friends with anybody who doesn't believe in gay marriage. I don't.
It's so interesting. I don't know.
I'm going to get hate for that. But if you don't believe that gay people should have the right to get married, then I'm sorry. I'll have a conversation with you. I'll hear you out, but I don't want to be your friend.
I probably won't hear you out. unless you have like... I don't know. I would need to know. I don't know. What like good excuse do you have other than
the Bible?
The Bible, I guess. And I guess maybe that. But again, I just don't believe that the loving God that at least Lutheranism teaches wants children to be kicked out of their homes by their parents.
No.
You know, and wants an entire society to ostracize them. That's just not the God that I was taught to believe in.
And I don't think Jesus would want those things either.
No. Jesus seemed to hang with the people who were the rejects.
Yeah, Jesus had long hair. He was a hipster. Come on.
It's interesting that people who want to stay in charge really like espouse a lot of loving Jesus, but want to make sure that other people don't get to be loved by Jesus. It's interesting. All right, should we talk about something spooky?
Yeah, let's do a spooky story.
And for those of you who don't love spookies, we got a really great email from, I don't know if she wants us to say her name, but we got a really great email from C, who says that she loves the podcast, but she hates scary things because they really get to her, and requested that we put timestamps in the show notes for when the scary story happens. So we are doing that. So if you are not a scary story person, duck out now, and we have the end time in the show notes, so then you know exactly when to come back in. So nice. I love it when people ask for what they need.
And then you get it, right?
And we can do it. Yes.
People can't read your mind. Bethany, why don't you kick us off on this Ouija board story?
All right. This is from Mandy. Mandy says, "Hi, ladies. I have a Ouija story from way back when I was in middle school. It still spooks me to this day, and because of it, I've scared the shit out of my kids, so they will never want to use a Ouija board, and so far, it's worked." It was a steamy summer day in northern New Jersey, and my friend and I were at my house, home alone. We decided it was too hot to go outside, so we decided to stay in the air conditioning and play with the Ouija board. We were hanging in my room, and since we were home alone, we left my door open.
We were super into Ouija boards back then and had a spirit named Gust. Gus that used to visit us all the time. Our middle school selves would fight over who Gus liked more. Gus was super friendly and would tell us dirty jokes or silly things like that. One day, Gus wasn't coming through, and the slider, or the planchette, as I recently found out it's called, was going crazy, dragging our fingers across the board. It suddenly started spelling out, "You will die." This happened 2 or 3 times, and then it went to "goodbye" at the bottom of the board. My friend and I obviously freaked out. We jumped up and ran out of my room and down the stairs and out of the house.
When my mom came home, we followed her inside, still freaking out. All of a sudden, we heard a slam and then a crash upstairs. Remember, no one was home and the windows were shut. My friend and I slowly went upstairs, with my mom following close behind, to find my door shut. We made my mom open it, and when we did, we saw that my full-length mirror that was attached behind the door was shattered into a million pieces exactly where we had been sitting, which was near impossible based on where we were sitting. The mirror would literally have to fly off the door. Of course, my mom made some excuse and told us to wait for my father to investigate more. When he got home, he determined there was no reason for the mirror to fall off my door, let alone where it landed, because the brackets that were holding it in place were all still intact. They still claim they don't believe, but they also made me get rid of the Ouija board, which I happily did, and they still tell the story to friends. I do sometimes still wonder what came of our spirit buddy Gus. Oh well, guess I'll never know, and that's from Mandy. It's one thing, like I have a photo, I have a canvas that is hanging in my kitchen. And sometimes when I have the window open and it's windy, the wind will rush through and like shoot behind the canvas. So it will lift it off the nail and it'll fall to the floor because it's really light. That's one thing. But if it's like screwed in with brackets and it somehow flies across the room and shatters into a million pieces, that's something else.
And the brackets are still there?
Yeah.
I've had brackets fall out of the wall because I very haphazardly installed a shelf into drywall sure. and I didn't use, you know, those things that you're supposed to use to make it stronger. I don't know, those things. Well, you know,
those like things. Plastic tube things.
Yeah. That expand. Yeah. The expanders. Like it's like a diaphragm for a wall.
Yeah.
I've had that fall before. But then the hardware in the wall has fallen too. And then there's just plaster everywhere.
Yeah.
The brackets still, that Mandy.
That's something else. That's something else.
You should try and get in touch with Gus. I would too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm against Ouija boards. I won't use them. I don't think they're safe. But look, you've already opened that portal, man. Mm-hmm. You might as well just like see if Gus is okay. Maybe mm-hmm. Gus is stuck in some sort of in-between world and needs you to like help them get out. Maybe they need you to find somebody to like open up a wall, throw some twine through it so that like you can go in, your husband can hold on to the twine. You go in, you pick up Carol Ann or Gus or whoever you have them picking up on the other side, pull them right through the other side. They fall down through the staircase covered in slime, but happy and healthy.
Yeah, it's just a normal day in time walking. That's what that's how it works. Yeah.
That's how it works.
Okay. Bethany, what did you learn this week?
I learned, if you are an eyeshadow wearer, you have to use an eyeshadow base. I went for years thinking that I could get away with not wearing one, but I've been watching a lot of Robert Welsh on YouTube, and he will die on the hill of using an eyeshadow base. And today I'm not using one, and my eyeshadow is creasing, and my mascara is rubbing, and my eyeliner is lifting, and it's just it's a hot mess. if you use an eyeshadow primer, it's sticky and everything sticks. And sometimes you just have to use the right tools for the right job, and you can't get around it.
You and I already use that Milky Jelly primer, so can't you just use that for your eyeshadow primer?
No. This is what I learned from Robert. Different skin.
Huh.
So the skin on your eyelids for most people is pretty oily. And so you want something that's going to both help block the oil coming through and ruining your makeup, but you also want something that is sticky enough to help bring out the color of the eyeshadow.
Oh.
And the Milky primer is good for making foundation really stick really nicely, but it's not going to control the oil in the same way that you want it to on your eyelid.
I think I have dry eyelids.
Oh, then you might be able to get away with it.
Yeah, I had some
not using it.
Some bad eczema on my eyelids over the winter, so. Oh, I'm sorry.
What about you, Kathleen? What'd you learn this week?
Okay, I'm about to blow your mind.
Okay, blow it.
Powdered sugar. Delicious, right?
Delicious.
Powdered sugar is just sugar that's been, it's been ground up. That's all it is. You, if you have sugar in your house and you have a recipe that calls for powdered sugar and you don't have any powdered sugar, you can just put it in the blender and grind it up.
Wait.
Bethany, that it's literally what it is. It's powdered sugar.
I have this container, sugar.
Yeah.
It's
if you had a blender or a spice grinder, or probably even like what you use to grind your coffee beans in, food processor, you could like crush it right now with a spoon and then.
Oh my God, it's totally powdered sugar.
Right? You could put sugar in a bag and then beat it with a rolling pin, and then you would have powdered sugar.
Why am I a moron who didn't know that? I feel like everyone listening is rolling their eyes collectively.
I didn't know it either. It's like that time I didn't know that a pony wasn't just a baby horse.
That's right.
It's its own thing.
It's its own thing. That's fascinating. I think it's because a lot of us are just very detached from food and where it comes from and don't even think about it.
Comes from ShopRite. That's good to know. That's where it comes from.
Yeah, it comes from ShopRite.
Yeah.
Kathleen, where can people find you on social media?
At WebGirlKathleen on everything except for TikTok. Don't know how to get in there. How about you, Bethany?
I am Radio Bethany on Twitter, Ms. Bethany Watson on Instagram. I have a TikTok page. I've never used it. You can also find our social media for the podcast. We are on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Instagram, Acquired Taste Podcast.
On Facebook, just search Acquired Taste Podcast. Also search for our fan group. They are just the best people in the world.
Super nice. We have an email address and acquiredtastepodcast@gmail.com.
We also have a P.O. Box.
Mm-hmm.
P.O. Box 1717 Hoboken, New Jersey 07030.
If you want to leave us a voicemail, our phone number is 917-994-0353.
This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath.
This podcast is edited by the fabulous Charlotte Gartenberg. You can follow her on Twitter at Chargar and on Instagram at lit_fuck.
Also, please leave us a review. 5 stars obviously is the best. You know, do it.
Yeah.
We love to hear from you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
that's all.
Don't leave us a review if it's a negative review. Don't.
I mean, I'm not going to tell you what to do.
I kid. Listen, I'm
just
not going
to. Kidding.
I'm just kidding. I'm not going to censor anybody. Yeah. Anyway.
Is that all we got?
It's all she wrote.
Okay. Have a wonderful week, everybody.
Angela Lansbury.
Murder, she wrote. There's been a murder.
Taste buds, this is what you had to say this week.
There's been a murder.
Hi there, ladies. This is Kate from Minnesota, and I just wanted to call and let you know that, let me tell you, I love listening to you guys so much. You are my favorite podcast that you're my only podcast that I listen through the advertisements and your ads and stuff and all of your beta brand ads and everything. I love hearing you talk, which it's the only podcast that I do this on. It's crazy. But I just love you ladies so much. You do such a good job. And, I really like your ads. You really have great items. I've already bought Beta Brand dress pants from you, from Beta Brand, because of you guys. And I've bought like this acne patch thing. I think Kathleen was talking about at one point. And, you guys recommend really awesome stuff. So I just wanted to let you know, I just heard an ad you guys did for for Beta Brand, and I'm like, I have a pair of those already, and they're awesome. And I, yeah, anyway, I just want to let you guys know, you guys are so awesome. I will even listen to your commercials. So, anyway, I hope you guys have a lovely weekend. I will talk to you later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. This message is for Kathleen. I also have listened to lots of fart noises on my Alexa, which then led us to the song Mr. Fart Farting Around the House, and also Mr. Fart Reggae Farts and Techno Farts. All are very, very good songs that you can find on Spotify or on YouTube. Just throwing it out there for all you fart lovers.
Hi, ladies. Taste Bud Cheyenne here. So I'm listening to the latest podcast about the scary movies, and Bethany brought up the movie Black Christmas. So, funny story, when this movie came out, I was maybe a freshman in high school, and my bedroom was painted the color of jaundice yellow. So we watched this movie, and I am freaking the fuck out because we have a ton of tack holes in our wall, and my room is jaundice yellow, so I'm thinking that I won't be able to see this man behind the walls because he's going to blend in right in with the color of the paint. And then my dog started barking at our Christmas tree, and I lost it. I remember calling my mom. She was at her night job, and I just remember calling her, crying my eyes out, saying that somebody was in the house, and it was all because of this stupid fucking movie, Black Christmas. So I just had to call and tell you a funny story because when Bethany said Black Christmas, I about pissed my pants from laughing so hard. Love you, ladies. Bye.
Hey, ladies. This is Taste Bud Sarah. I just had to call and thank you for bringing up Emily in Paris. Because let me tell you, the show is like Mon episode 3. It's a little substanceless and ridiculousness. And I love it. I so needed this. I stopped watching stuff, I don't know, forever ago. I can't tell you the last time was that I watched something or what it was besides like an Instagram story. And I so needed this. This has been like the best mental health thing in the world for me to just zone out on this happy, charmed millennial. Bye.